Thank you for listening to the only podcast dedicated to the business of pharmacy. Welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast Show. You can find all of our episodes at pharmacypodcast.com.
This is Napoleo Monroe, Managing Director of New Directions Technology Consulting, and you're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Good morning, Pharmacy Podcast listeners. This is Ron Lanson, President of True North Political Solutions, where we provide our clients marketplace intelligence and advocacy, as well as government affairs strategists for the Pharmacy Podcast Show. And this morning, we've got a great guest for the listeners. We have Napoleon Monroe, Managing Director for New Directions Technology Consulting. Good morning, Napoleon.
Good morning, Ron.
How are you this morning?
Doing very well. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
Definitely. I think that the listeners are going to learn a lot. And every week we try to bring them something different. So I figured we'd start off the interview like I do with all of my other guests. You can tell our listeners about your background.
I grew up in the South, and after undergraduate, I joined the U.S. Army. There was very little choice because it was Vietnam era. I was very fortunate to go to the 8th Army Data Processing Center in Seoul, Korea, rather than Vietnam, but it was a learning experience. Back in the U.S., after leaving the Army, I went into a textiles company in data processing and industrial engineering. I didn't stay there forever, though. My interest in medication management began soon after I was hired by Dr. Stan Sarnoff in 1970. Stan was the founder of Survival Technology, which is now owned by Pfizer. Stan invented an auto-injector to replace the syringe. The syringe was a toothpaste tube with a needle on it, which was used to administer atropine as a nerve agent antidote. He had interest in other civilian drug delivery systems as well. And the one that's best known, the EpiPen, was the result of the work of a number of creative people led by Stan at Survival. I went there because I was a sales engineer at that point for Owens Illinois Kimball Division. That's part of now by a German-based company. But at that time, it was large U.S. Multinational. And they sold glass for the pharmaceutical industry. And I worked to help solve Survival's glass breakage issues with the EpiPen prototype. Fortunately, we succeeded. Fortunately, Stan hired me, and I managed the EpiPen, including answering the customer inquiries. I also worked on Survival's military auto-injector products and managed Survival's intellectual property for 25-plus years. Along with others, we invented a number of drug delivery improvements and some early telemedicine products. When Stan died and a new president arrived, he wanted to sell the company. I then moved to Henry Schein, which is a large multinational distribution company. And there I managed their private brands, including product contract management and customer relations for 15-plus years. Great company. They still lead in the supply of medical devices and some pharma to the dental industry, the veterinary industry, and to some extent to the medical industry as well.
Sounds good. You like science?
I enjoy science. I'm not a scientist. But I respect science and respect engineers. And my basic desire is to work through all these scientific developments, engineering developments, and the regulatory challenges to see how we can make companies that make money improving healthcare.
Well, tell our listeners a little bit about your company. How did it start and what do you do there?
Well, my experience as a drug delivery product manager and intellectual property portfolio manager led me to want to be part of the emerging telemedicine industry. Again, we've done some early work with Sarnoff, and it was pre-internet and pre-microsensors and pre-a lot of things, but I wanted to go back to it. And in 2006, we began filing patent applications and later founded New Directions Technology Consulting, which is now a Pennsylvania-based consultancy. We develop commercial opportunities for technologies in healthcare, especially in medication management. The work includes contracts with Fortune 500 companies, some medium-sized companies, and some startups as well. Also do some work with trade and professional associations. With all of these, the objective is to extend the reach and value of their capabilities. So, given my focus and experience in medication management, especially mobile medication management and medical products information, we founded New Directions. New Directions is the exclusive market developer for 5 granted U.S. patents and the corresponding foreign patents in what we refer to as the MMED portfolio. That's a portfolio for advanced mobile medication management. Several of the patents relate to devices, some relate to systems, and it's combinations of means that have now developed and will allow companies to better connect patients remotely to caregivers. And these can be professional or non-professional caregivers. So view this, please, as my conflict statement. I do have financial interest in improving medication adherence.
Well, I guess my next question to you would be, what are the requirements for an adherence system?
Well, you know, it goes beyond adherence a bit, especially with biotech and specialty pharma. These drugs are often fragile and expensive and sometimes they're difficult to use. And nobody likes to self-inject, but we're more and more moving into home injections. So adherence is a key part, but pharmaceutical companies have a need to manage the drugs beyond adherence. But I'd like to expand it just a little bit. Now, what are the requirements? It has to be a proven system. It needs to be, first of all, easy to use, so it will be used. It needs to be comprehensive, including the needs of the patient and of the caregivers. It has to be based on an interoperative set of technologies for deploying, managing, analyzing, and assisting patients in complying, reporting their compliance. And to go back to medication management, to having the right people understand the status of the medication itself. So those are pretty broad sweeping requirements, but to the best of my knowledge, no company has yet fully met those requirements. A lot of people are working on it, but there are some underlying biases that may have slowed down adherence systems. And everyone likes to think that their particular patients will always comply. Fact is, they often won't. The one-way education that we've been accustomed to giving, like a wad of paper closely printed and folded many times and then handed to the patient when at the pharmacy or in hospital release, that doesn't work. Sick patients don't listen to the oral brief. If they do, they may not understand it. There are a lot of Latin terms, other professional terms that are in there that patients may not understand. The doctors and the other professionals are stressed for time. And before, they hadn't been well compensated for this, and they're still not, arguably, but it's getting better. But then even if the patients listen, they don't remember. So there have been a number of companies that have put out nagging alarms attached to pill boxes, and those don't really work very well either. We know the phenomenon of alert fatigue. The apps and diaries often don't work because the patients have to spend time filling them out, and compliance with the apps is pretty terrible. Packaging solutions such as blisters or bags, those alone help. But they don't get it. They don't have interactive communication generally. As mentioned before, the biotech products and specialty pharma have really often extraordinary requirements for special care. So making these products, getting them into the right hands and making sure they're used is important and challenging. One specific area of challenge is clinical trials. And there, I think the adherence products and systems will have a lot of use. But again, there's work that has to be done to bring these systems and products to the state where they're really usable by all of the stakeholders. You know, there's also been criticism that medication management products make increased costs, they cost too much. But the cost of failing to use available medication and the tools that will help us is far greater. You could just ask the people who have repeat their clinical trials because of non-adherence. Now, that's a summary, and we'll come back to some other points on that maybe later.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, you mentioned the cost, and I mean, just thinking about a lot of these specialty medications that are very expensive, and then all of a sudden you don't have the patient adherence. And I mean, I can understand, especially if a patient is taking multiple drugs, you know, sometimes it's too much, or, you know, sometimes somebody might have forgotten, but, you know, these drugs are not cheap, and it does definitely cost the system. And one thing that you said that I was really just kind of taken back on, because I read a lot of things about adherence, you know, in different industry magazines, you know, just by talking to people, and I heard of these, I guess, you know, the inventions about the alarms attached to pillboxes and things. And you think, well, yeah, if somebody's actually gone through this, it obviously is going to work. And yeah, you're saying that most times it doesn't. So it's just like, wow. You know, I keep thinking about the money that is spent because this doesn't happen all the time. The adherence part doesn't happen. So very interesting.
There are lots of costs in healthcare. And a lot of these are not well managed. And people started putting the alarmed pillboxes into patients' hands a number of years ago. But it's just like with the Fitbit. The devices are hard to make and hard to engineer so that they're easy to make and reliable and pass the regulatory requirements. Some of them are regulated medical devices, some are not, depends on the claims. But it has to be more well-rounded than it's been to date. It's like the electronic medical records. The criticism there is, well, they don't fit the workflow of the normal doctor or the practice. I think some of the products that have been introduced don't yet address the real workflow and don't provide the features and the ease of use that the market, the patients, all the stakeholders will really benefit from having. But there are a lot of smart people working on it. Some of them are my licensees, sub-licensees, but we'll see where that goes. And hopefully we'll all succeed and improve outcomes at a reduced cost.
I hope so, because that's what the supply chain and a lot of these hardworking professionals seek to do every single day, is apply their knowledge, reduce costs, and get the improved patient outcomes.
That's the mantra, and that's what a lot of people are working toward.
Exactly. Well, moving on to our next question, what's your take on where the healthcare supply chain is heading, specifically the pharma supply chain?
The entire supply chain in healthcare is being digitized. And there was a lot of resistance to that, and some people said it would never happen. But it's already a fact in retail. I mean, if you go to a drugstore or a pharmacy, there are barcodes on most all the products. The barcodes there aren't really providing as much information as healthcare would like. So in late 2013, the Drug Supply Chain Security Act became law. And a little bit earlier than that, in September, FDA issued a final unique device identifier rulemaking. These are both requiring automated identity and data capture. And the systems will give us a lot more information. I think it's going to allow us to improve healthcare information fairly dramatically. There will be a cost, and that cost is sometimes pretty burdensome for especially smaller companies and smaller firms, but it's really toward a longer-term goal. So they'll also expand the abilities to facilitate medication management and medical device management into the patient's hands. So there'll be something that is electronically readable as a tag on the product. And the two overriding thoughts, if you will, is the supply chain is being extended to managing products in the patient's hands, so-called in the wild. And the information chain is being expanded along with the supply chain. So automated identity and data capture are key to this. And it's really a very recent development, but I think it's going to be game-changing. And I also, as a kid, I worked in a supermarket, and you know, everything was keyed in manually by the checker. I was the bagger normally because I wasn't fast enough to be a checker. But you know, her hands would fly over the keyboard. If she didn't know something, she'd make it up. But now everything is scanned. And if you imagine the changes that technology has brought about in the supply chain, the same thing is going to happen, I think, in the healthcare supply chain. So as to supply chain, adherence and compliance are now recognized as major failures. But all this is not a new idea. I mean, Dr. Koop, when he was at FDA, when he was Surgeon General, mentioned that medications don't work if patients don't take them. And that's not a new idea. And even going back to Hippocrates, he said, beware that patients lie about the taking of medications. So, you know, it's not new. The supply chain, though, is taking more account of the realities and the needs, adherence, compliance, and medication management. So we'll take this, some other specifics on medication adherence, but the impact on the supply chain is that we're extending the definitions of point of care, and the supply chain becomes wherever the patient doses or wherever the patient uses a medical device. So that's a major change. Regulations and laws are slowly coming around to the understanding of that need. Medication therapy management is now being funded and expanded into the use of telemedicine. The specialty drugs, as you pointed out, are taking a greater and greater share of the pharmacy budget, and those are moving into home use. So all of this makes medication management very important, and the regimen must be followed, but the products need to be controlled as well. So that's a summary. The pharma companies like to provide information. They do it often through direct-to-consumer advertising, but the pharma companies have not been so comfortable with patient information coming directly back to them. And we could talk for a long time about the reasons there, but I think most in your audience understand it. The change for pharma is that they're now being asked to differentiate their products. They're being asked, why is your product better than somebody else's brand or generic or biosimilar? And they're further being asked, what kind of service can you supply? What can you provide to help us help our patients? This is all new for the pharmaceutical industry. At one point, they could get their new drug approval or ANDA and just go about selling it and advertising it. And yes, they had to report adverse reactions, but there was far less emphasis on what happens to the product after it leaves the pharmacy, after it reaches the patient's hand. Now, that's the change in supply chain. Supply chain is now extending all the way to the patient.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. I just wrote an article for Specialty Pharmacy Times, and it was a trend that we're now starting to see. It's a conundrum within pharma, high price versus patient access. And, you know, you mentioned here, you say, why is your product better than someone else's brand or generic? And you think about how pharma really was about, you know, creating these me too products that managed the patient's condition and made it livable, to where now they're making these transformative drugs that, you know, they're almost curative, if not curative. And the question that a lot of these payers now are having is, okay, well, if we've got two drugs that, you know, are a step below curative and they cost, you know, X and Y, you know, that clinical distinction between the two, what is that? And I think that that's really, like, as you said, pharma's not really used to explaining why something is better than something else other than just putting it out there.
And they're not used to having a role in ensuring patient outcomes.
Yeah.
And so my belief is they're going to be partnering with some of the pharmacy companies and others in providing these kinds of services in support of their drugs, their molecules or their biotech products. And it's a revenue opportunity as well. And I know that several large pharma companies have established business units around this. They're struggling with it, but the tools that will help all of the stakeholders in bringing these services about, I think, largely relate to medication management. So hopefully we'll have space to help everyone, and we can go forward and look to better outcomes and lower costs.
Hopefully. Well, Napoleon, do you see any challenges in the pharmacy market?
One key challenge is nobody's yet figured out who owns the patient relationship or who owns the data. And everybody's got a finger in that, but it's not clear who really is going to take the lead. The accountable care organization movement is rippling through, and we're figuring out what accountable care is. And some companies have been essentially practicing that, and they're pilots. But individual doctors are struggling with, do I sell my practice to an ACO, and do I how can I best serve my patients, and what does it all mean? The insurers and other payers like CMS as the big dog, but others as well, are challenged by, you know, what are we going to do for patients? What are we going to do with the information? How do we make a change? Payers often include employers, and the employers have a stake beyond just the health of the patient. They want to keep their employees healthy and at work and engaged, and go beyond presenteeism to full engagement with the work. A new entrant is the personal emergency response system companies like Philips with their Lifeline, and ADT is announced a relationship with one of the medical device and monitoring companies. So those companies are coming in and looking at, do they have a role? The pharmacy benefit management companies obviously are there, along with the chain pharmacies and the local pharmacists and the pharma companies. We've talked about that. But also in that mix, and it is a challenge, would be, what's regulation going to look like? Last week, FDA announced some simplifying rulemaking, or I'm sorry, guidance, it wasn't rulemaking, around the simpler, non-risky devices, and basically saying that they were not going to regulate this, these types of very simple devices. My entreaty to my clients is, well, be prepared to validate your products as though they were regulated, because otherwise you may miss some key questions. Now, I also help to advise them how to keep their products out of the higher classes of regulation, because they are burdensome. So keep your claims, keep your expectations clean and simple, but also make sure you validate and have truly safe and effective and useful, easy to use products. So that's you want a challenge, meaning all of that swirled together is a challenge. But there are a lot of folks working on who does what and how best to do what they've chosen to do. So while the old pharma model is broken, pharma's working hard on building a new model, and they're setting up the business units, as mentioned. The tag word or the tag phrase there is service beyond the pill or service beyond the script. And I think we'll see more and more of that. A recent conference, Walgreens was there with a major booth, and CVS is obviously repositioning as a healthcare provider, so they both are. That's a major change. But again, classically, physicians and the other professionals in the office had been the ones who owned the patient, but they're already overburdened. And those groups usually have less direct pharmaceutical-specific knowledge than the pharmacist or the companies making the products. So I think everyone's going to have a role. One key question is, who's the patient going to trust? And pharmacists, some of the studies show, are more trusted than most of the others mentioned. Some of the other groups are really not so well liked. MDs are liked, but they don't have the time. But we won't go into who's not liked. At any rate, pharma, I believe, needs the pharmacist, and we're in the process of figuring out who pays, another key question. But investments are being made, and I think we'll see a mixed model both on the provider side and on the payer side.
Well, I know we're getting towards the end of the interview. I know we have two questions left before we get to the housekeeping where I ask for your contact information. Tell our listeners a little bit about your take on adherence and medication management.
Well, there are organizations which have really led in emphasizing the importance of adherence. NEHI has publicized the $290 billion savings that relates to medication adherence. And a fairly new organization, Prescription for a Healthy America, is also leading in emphasizing that. There seem to be conferences every week on compliance and adherence. I'm going to several through the course of this winter. Pharma and MHIMS have announced the Patient Connected Healthcare Alliance. This was in D.C. a couple of weeks ago at the MHealth Summit. So there's a lot of emphasis bubbling through. A number of companies have announced their medication management apps and solutions over the years. These are often systems that don't address all of the needs. Adherence has been demonstrated, better adherence, better outcomes in some clinicals. There doesn't seem to be any clear leading company. IMS, which is the leading pharmaceutical tracking company, has reported on the sorry state of healthcare apps, including medication adherence apps. So the key is nobody's made it easy for the patient yet or useful for the providers, and that has to happen. It's going to happen, and it'll be integrated with other clinical and lifestyle information. We'll see where it goes. Some of my clients are working very hard on bringing this to pass. The number of announcements of products has accelerated dramatically in this last year. And again, some companies are going to get it right. There's been a lot of investment in mobile dispensers. These are aids. There's none that's going to be the magic bullet. Grants have been awarded, pilots have been run, and the companies are working very hard to bring these products into both compliance and into full marketability, meeting the patient's needs. It's tough with medication adherence because there are many different dosage forms. And for the foreseeable use future, we'll be dealing with pills and capsules and inhalers and injections and other packaged products. And even the pumps have issues with adherence to instructions and refilling. So there's a role for adherence and medication management all along the chain. Some examples, Proteus has a chip on a pill which confirms dosing when the pill reaches the stomach. Glocap has gotten a lot of press on their pill vial. They apparently have a new, more connected version coming out in the spring. A couple of months ago, Bayer introduced a Bluetooth Betaferon auto-injector in Europe. It's not in the U.S. And recently, Propeller press released a partnership announcement with Boehringer Ingelheim on their inhaler. A week ago, an EpiPen case called Veta was introduced and is supposed to ship in the fall 2015. So many devices are available. Many devices are being upgraded. There are many study proposals, and a lot of devices are pending approval. It's too early to see the real benefit in some of these, but I firmly believe that it is something which is going to aid in adherence, compliance, and management to the patient's benefit.
Well, for our last question, how do you see healthcare changing to benefit the consumer?
Well, not all the changes are going to be good news for the consumer. And being asked to pay a larger percentage of the cost, they're being asked to devote energy to being more informed, and many patients won't like that. Longer term, I think it's actually good for the consumer and good for society to have a more informed population, make better decisions. And no matter what you think about Obamacare, and even if it were to magically go away next week or the week after, healthcare had to change. It has to change. And basic questions have to be answered. How are we going to improve adherence, medication management? Where are the opportunities? How are they going to be met? Who's going to really help the patient? I think pharmacy has a key role to play, maybe the key role. But technology and committed individuals can help the consumer and the other stakeholders improve outcomes. Pharmacists are more accessible and more trusted, so I think they're going to have a greater and greater role in this. Technology can provide the means for dealing with the issues, but it needs intelligent application. And so I'm very hopeful, as you just stated, I'm hopeful that these technologies and committed individuals are going to make a difference in healthcare.
Me too. Well, if our listeners have questions, how can they get a hold of you?
They can reach me through the website, New Directions Technology Consulting, or one website that talks about the entire patent portfolio is www.mmedhealth.com. The consultancy email is nap@newdirectionsconsulting.net. And if there's something urgent, try my cell, 718-427-3038. And I'll look forward to working with folks from your audience on improving outcomes and better managing medications. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sounds great. Well, that was Napoleon Monroe, Managing Director of New Directions Technology Consulting. And I'm Ron Lanson, President of True North Political Solutions and Government Affairs Strategist for the Pharmacy Podcast Show. If anyone has any questions for me offline, I can be reached by email at ronlanson3@truenorthpsasinpoliticalsolutions.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn, truenorthpoliticalsolutions.com, or Twitter. We have a Twitter handle @truenorth_PS. Napoleon, it's been great, and we are definitely going to have to bring you back on the interview, or at least on the podcast at some point, to get an update about your company and the more trends that you're looking at.
Ron, thanks, and thanks to your listeners for their engagement in improving healthcare.
Sounds great.